understanding of the history of termination of pregnancy services in the UK is that the NHS has always been lacking in services beyond maybe about 12 weeks of gestation, and that after that point, the only option really would have been a medical induction of labour.
Welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Catherine Mousley.
And I'm Hayley Manning. Today, we're joined by Jane Fisher from Antenatal Results and Choices, or ARC for short, and Dr. Patricia Lohr, Medical Director of the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, or BPAS for short. We're also joined by Sabrina Fletcher, who is the TFMR doula, and Emma Bell, who's the TFMR mama, and Paige Wissam, who's a TFMR mum and listener and contributor to Time to Talk TFMR. We're talking about surgical termination today, and this is a special podcast episode for Baby Loss Awareness Week. We've decided to really just focus on surgical termination. It's a lesser discussed aspect of TFMR on the social media circuit. This often leads people to feel isolated in their experience, and we're all about trying to combat this, whatever your TFMR experience is. So welcome, Jane and Patricia. We're going to welcome you guys first. And what we really wanted to sort of hear about was how the BPAS clinics have been set up to look after TFMR parents.
Hi, everyone. It's Jane here, and thanks for having me on again. It goes back quite a long way, actually. I've been with ARC now, it will nearly be 20 years. And when I started with ARC, it became clear very quickly that women were not getting a choice of method when they were facing TFMR. And we worked many years trying to look at ways around this. And finally, it was about 2009, we were lucky enough and credibly got some money from the Department of Health at the time to put a working group together to really drill down to what the issues were and try and improve things. And fantastically, Patricia joined that group. And when we came to looking at ways and strategies of improving choice of method, we knew it wasn't going to happen through NHS hospitals. There just wasn't the expertise there. The expertise was sitting in the independent sector providers. And so once we'd had the working group and done some research with ARC parents as well, Patricia and I sort of sat down, put our heads together to see what BPAS could do in relation to providing a service that would try to meet the needs of women and couples that were coming to BPAS clinics in the context of TFMR. So I'll hand over to Patricia now to talk to you about how that worked practically.
Hi. Thank you for having me on as well. So the pathway that we developed at BPAS, and as Jane described, we put a working group together, which included clinicians and counselors from within BPAS, but also people like Jane and people who are working in the NHS caring for women and others who had been given a diagnosis of a fetal anomaly. And we developed a pathway to be able to provide individuals who wanted to have a surgical termination an opportunity to have that with us in collaboration with their NHS providers. So the pathway that we set up was integrated into our regular termination of pregnancy lists, but we thought a lot about the special needs of people who were seeking termination for medical reasons and the sorts of different ways of management that we might need to attend to for them as opposed to our usual patient population who were actively choosing to have a termination for other reasons. And this involved a number of things that really started from the moment that we would interact with the women or the couple or the people who were seeking our services, thinking about what language we might use to talk to them about the termination, being mindful of the fact that they might need some other things that our other patient population may not. So for example, wanting to have some kind of memento after the termination to take away with them. And we designed a pathway whereby their care could be integrated into our usual lists, but they would have an opportunity to come into the clinic, have a private room where they could stay with their support person until they went into theater, then to have the procedure and then be reunited with their support person as soon as possible afterwards. And we would also take care to make sure that we talked to them about any particular needs that they had with regard to the fetal remains. So whether that was if they needed to have further testing done, then we could work with their hospital provider to make that happen. Or if they wanted to arrange a burial or cremation or some other ceremony around the loss of the pregnancy, we would help make that happen for them. So we set up the pathway a few years ago now. I can't believe it's actually been that long, Jean.
No, incredible.
And I feel like we've been able to meet many people's needs, actually. And I've been quite happy that we've been able to make it possible for many people to choose a surgical method if that's what they preferred.
I just want to dip in there too, because I'm going to make Patricia blush a bit, because hats off to BPAS, of the independent providers, they were the only one that truly engaged with us to take this forward. We tried very hard with all the others and they've gone a couple of centimetres, but nothing like the lengths that BPAS have. And it's not easy, because obviously a BPAS is providing services to women in all kinds of situations.
Yeah.
And we were very conscious that some of the staff may be slightly uncomfortable with thinking, well, we're going to deliver a different kind of standard of care to these women and not to the other women we deal with. So we wanted to make sure that it wasn't about delivering better care. It was about targeted, specialized, sensitive care because of the needs of these particular clients. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. I'm wondering if mums that are here, TFMR mums that are here, I know, you know, you all have sort of different experiences with surgical termination. Some of you have been in a clinic situation, a private clinic situation. Some of you have been in a hospital setting. I was wondering if there was anybody that wanted to say something based on that. Sabrina, would you like to come in on that?
Yeah, hi, I'm Sabrina. I am the TFMR doula. So I support people who are going through this situation. And I went through it myself. And listening to you talk, Patricia, it makes me very sad, because that was the sensitive care that I wanted and I didn't get. And it could have made all the difference. I feel like it could have lessened my PTSD. I mean, it's a mental health issue. I was not seen. No one helped us with the remains. We even asked for a private space. They wouldn't give it to us. I wanted to be spending more time with my husband. We were separated. This was even before COVID. They didn't have to do that. They could have made arrangements if they would have tried. So it makes me very sad. I mean, I'm glad for the people who do have this care, but I'm very sad for myself that I did not. And I know that many others have been in my situation too. So thank you for providing that. Yeah.
Sabrina, I just wanted to say you're in Mexico, and your termination took place in Mexico, didn't it? And you had to travel out of your state to a different state.
Yeah. So I had to travel to a different state to avoid an even bigger stigmatized and shameful experience of needing to go through an ethics committee at a hospital. Although now I kind of feel like, oh, maybe I should have put myself through that so that I could have had a more dignified experience. But I also forgive myself and really, like, I don't know, send hugs back to myself in that moment and know that I made the best decision I did. But it doesn't take away the trauma that I still hold now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can really hear that. I mean, I think, you know, for me, I was really motivated to be able to provide this service at BPAS in the best way that we possibly could. And I think that the way that we did it through co-production with people like Jane was hugely important, because we were able to hear what individuals like yourself would need to make the process as tolerable as possible. So knowing it's never going to be easy, it's going to be a sad moment, even if the procedure itself is relatively quick and uncomplicated. So really understanding the way that people were going to come into the service, what they would really need to be able to cope as well as they could and afterwards. And I don't think that we could have done that without people like Jane or some of the bereavement midwives who sat in the working group with us, really informing me actually about what people like yourself might need.
Yeah, it's really important to hear the experiences of people that are working with parents or from parents themselves, isn't it? Paige, I can see that you'd like to come in and say something around this.
So I was in a clinic. I didn't go to the hospital. When we received our diagnosis, I had a matter of a few weeks to decide what option we were going through, because I personally couldn't do the needle into the stomach to stop the heartbeat. It wasn't an option for me. So we had a matter of days to decide. So we were in a clinic and we had protesters outside, so we had to use the back entrance. So we weren't bombarded with them. They had signs up saying obviously what we were doing was wrong, but they didn't understand what we were going through. I would have loved to have had a separate room, but we were actually in the same room as a lot of women who, from what we overheard, this was their second or third one that they've had, and they were actually using it as contraception as opposed to, I mean, well, it is contraception, but it was really hard to sit there listening to them saying this as if it didn't matter, when to us, it was the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, that's hard, isn't it? I mean, it is. This is kind of the situation of being in a clinic where you, like you said, Patricia, you've got many different patient users.
Yeah. And of course, you know, because we have freestanding clinics, you know, the people who are against abortion were much easier to target than if someone were providing these services in a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is not absolutely not ideal, because people who are against abortion don't distinguish between anybody who's coming through the doors and what they might be there for. They're not interested in understanding the individual circumstances of women who are coming to our clinics for care. Mm. I mean, with my other hat on, I work with the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists as an advisor on education to try to improve and increase the skills amongst obstetricians and gynecologists who are working in hospital settings in termination care and particularly in second trimester surgical abortion. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a method that I think every fetal medicine specialist and certainly gynecologist should have in their toolbox, really, so that they can provide continuity of care for people in situations like yourselves. You know, so they are doing the diagnostic tests, they are making the diagnosis, they're advising you of prognosis, they're there to talk to you about your options. And then if a surgical termination is what you choose, they are also there to provide it. So it's both a mission of mine to be able to provide this service as well as I can within BPAS clinics, although I do understand the limitations, but also thinking more to the future, trying to grow a sort of generation of people who are in training in obstetrics and gynecology who will have these skills, so that people in your situation don't necessarily have to come in to one of our clinics at BPAS. Some people may choose to do that and that's fine, but others may wish to stay in their hospital setting.
I've just seen you nodding there, Emma. So I just wanted to ask you what your experience was.
So my personal experience is I had a surgical termination, and initially I did look at the clinic route, and there were a couple of things for me that made it emotionally impossible for me to do that. And the two main things, I suppose, was not being able to have my partner with me the whole time. And they said that I could have my partner with me until I went to sleep, but that I wouldn't have my partner with me again until I was dressed, checking out paperwork, which to me just wasn't enough. I really needed him for the whole, I needed him when I was waking up and out of recovery, basically, not when I was dressed and walking out, signing out. And the massive thing for me, honestly, was I wanted my baby's remains to be cremated on their own. And what I really needed was somebody to look after my baby's remains, have them cremated, and for me to receive the ashes. And what I was faced with was receiving my baby's remains in a plastic tub to deal with myself. And I honestly just couldn't face it. I was so shocked and traumatized by receiving that information that I just couldn't go down that route. So luckily for us and COVID, our wedding got cancelled and our refund came in the September, and we found out that Willow had Edwards syndrome in the October. So we used our wedding money and paid to go to a private hospital in London, where I could have Gareth with me. And when I came out of recovery, I came straight to him and he helped me get Justin. He helped me, you know, he was there, and they very kindly looked after our baby and dealt directly, and she was cremated. And I didn't have to be faced with that, which I knew would cause me a lot of trauma to work through. I just couldn't face it, honestly.
Sounds awful. And it makes me quite sad that some people might not have that direction, or they might not think about going somewhere else, or they can go somewhere else, or they can research their options as well.
I mean, I was in a very fortunate position that we had that refund. Otherwise, that probably wouldn't have been open to us, and I would have, you know, had to deal with the trauma of receiving my baby back to me in that way as I was about to walk out of the clinic onto the pavement. And that just for me was just unbearable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Jane and Patricia, you know, Patricia, you touched on this on your other hat of training doctors to be able to provide this within NHS hospitals. And I know, Jane, you've talked about this before, that, you know, we used to have the skills within NHS hospitals and it's been slowly eroded over time. That's my understanding. And then we needed the independent clinic to come in. Patricia's kind of going, no, not exactly. I can see her sort of moving. So explain that to us. Explain what happened, because we get asked this all the time. Why can't it be in hospital? Yeah.
So it's my understanding, actually, that skills for surgical termination in the second trimester have never really existed in the NHS to any great degree. I know that there are more doctors in the NHS who have these skills now than when I started at BPAS in 2007. But my understanding of the history of termination of pregnancy services in the UK is that the NHS has always been lacking in services beyond maybe about 12 weeks of gestation, and that after that point, the only option really would have been a medical induction of labor. And some of this was because the skills were never learned, but some of this was because of a real belief that surgical termination in the second trimester was unsafe.
Okay.
And the difficulty there, I think, is that when you don't provide the service yourself, it's very hard to believe that it's anything except for what you hear. It's hard to bust those myths, really. And independent clinics like those run by BPAS rely on NHS hospitals to assist us in the case of serious complications. And it is true that complications can occur with the surgical procedures that we use in the second trimester. And so what those hospitals might see is the infrequent serious complication coming through after a surgical termination of pregnancy, but they think that that's a common occurrence and it only adds to their misunderstanding about the safety and effectiveness of this method. So it's true that as time has gone on, more and more abortion services are carried out in the independent sector than in the NHS and NHS hospitals. But some of that is because NHS hospitals actually aren't able to provide, and certainly aren't able to provide at all gestations at which women need terminations. Whereas in the independent sector, we've developed those skills. It's our specialism. And we have a commitment to make those services available for the women who need them.
I think some like doctors don't know either, because I remember Googling what the next steps were for me and having to inform the doctor who was telling me the wrong information for the wrong gestation.
Can I just chip in there? Because that has been an uphill struggle that we're starting to see some results of in the last 15, 20 years in educating healthcare professionals in the NHS about second trimester surgical terminations. And it puts our hair on end when we hear from women still about the kind of information they're getting from their doctors, who should know better, who should be keeping up with the literature and have an understanding of, yes, there are risks, but those risks are, you know, they're not huge. It's rare that major complications happen. And it's really important that doctors are giving the correct information to women. The other thing I wanted to pick up on from what Patricia said earlier was about fetal medicine. And again, there's been a sort of cultural feeling against surgical termination, I think, in a lot of fetal medicine centres, in that they feel that there may be the need for full post-mortem, etc. They feel that because they can offer it, the medical is somehow a more natural way of ending the pregnancy in these circumstances. So again, we've had to go to them and say, look, you need to listen to women and what they can best cope with, rather than you thinking you know what's best in a more paternalistic view. And the fact that so few fetal medicine doctors take responsibility for their actions, as I like to say, in that there obviously there are some fantastic interventions now, but they're minimal. A lot of the expertise of a good fetal medicine consultant is brilliant scanning, being able to spot things on scan that others wouldn't, but not always able to say we can do anything about this. All we can do is offer you options. And then they almost say, well, that's where my responsibility ends. I found the issue, now you have to deal with it. And we've often had a problem with that. And that, thankfully, there are a handful of doctors that do go beyond, but not as many as Patricia was saying as there should be, that take full responsibility for the pathway.
Mm. I see Sabrina nodding quite a bit there.
Oh, yeah, I have a question for Patricia. Is this even true for a natural, for lack of a better term, a natural miscarriage or stillbirth in the second trimester? So it doesn't really matter what kind of loss, the doctors just are not trained in that trimester. Is that what you're seeing?
That's exactly right. So there's a skills gap there, Sabrina. So the procedure that we perform is called a dilation and evacuation, or D&E. And they just don't have the skills to perform it. But you're quite right. I mean, it's a skill that can be applied for abortions, for terminations, for an intrauterine fetal demise in the second trimester, or even when there's a need to evacuate the uterus quickly. So in the case of severe sepsis or a preterm, very severe preeclampsia, where the woman's life is at risk, basically. And where it might be less safe to perform a medical induction of labor, which can sometimes take several hours and sometimes days. It is really a skills gap more than anything.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, we've had this come up from listeners and sort of saying, you know, is it that they just don't want to? So I guess what I'm hearing from you is that there becomes this kind of, well, we think it's less safe, so therefore, and they start sort of finding the evidence to support their own kind of feeling about that, really. And so then there's a lack of will to train in this. But I know also, what I wanted to also sort of ask you about was that I know that you're working on specific clinics for women who may have medical conditions that would prevent them from being looked after in the independent sector.
Is this somehow linked to being able to build up those skills?
Yeah, so with yet another hat, for a few years, I've been working with NHS England to help develop a stream of funding for what's called specialized commissioning. So it's a special pot of money that is distributed to hospitals. And we're looking to develop regional networks of hospitals that would be able to manage people with complex comorbidities needing termination for whatever reason. So these are people who aren't able to be treated in a freestanding clinic because of whatever their particular circumstances, some sort of medical condition that's out of control, for example, severe cardiac disease, things like that. And alongside being in receipt of that special funding to do the procedures themselves, those networks also have to commit to providing training for junior doctors to be able to obtain those skills. And within each region will need to be able to provide terminations up to 24 weeks of gestation. So the main focus of this is not really termination of pregnancy for fetal anomaly per se.
Yeah.
But there will at least be one hospital within that network that can provide up to 24 weeks of gestation. And so that will build the ability then for them to be able to train junior doctors to that gestation. So yeah, within the network, there may be other hospitals that provide to lower gestations, but across the many hospitals, they'll be able to provide the full spectrum.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we've woven into that a requirement that they provide that training for surgical skills.
And just to add to that, I think since we tried many years ago to set up a specialised surgical service for everybody, it didn't work, it didn't fly. But this service, I think, well, I've been told, and I'm going to fight for this, over time, it will accommodate those women who need to access the services in the context of TFMR, because people will need the lists, that they will have lists there. And I'm pretty sure that that will happen over time.
So, yeah.
Can I just ask why it didn't take off the first time round?
Because there really wasn't the appetite for it. NHS England, the specialised commissioning, they have all sorts of competing service specifications for different services. And of course, they really weren't interested in termination services.
Mm.
It wasn't top of their list, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It wasn't for want of trying, but it just didn't go anywhere.
I find that was really bewildering. Like, how can they not be interested in something like this? It's just such a huge topic.
Yep. You'd have to ask the upper echelons of NHS England that question.
But I mean, it's good to hear that it's happening now. And I know that, you know, listeners will be happy about that, because it is something that keeps getting asked. Why can't I have it done in my hospital? Why do I have to go to a clinic? It's distressing, as Emma said, you know, it's adding to my trauma, as Paige said, having to walk past protesters and whatnot. And I just thought, you know, Paige, I just wanted to ask you about how you feel, you know, what you felt then about your surgical termination and how you feel now.
During the time, obviously, it's one of the most difficult decisions you have to make. It was definitely right. It was heartbreaking at the time, but I've come to terms with the fact that it was the right decision at the time. Any other option, I don't think I'd be where I am today. I don't think I would have coped as well. I took a month off work and I dealt with it in my own way. I have a lot of regrets now, more than I did obviously when it happened, but I've since had a daughter. And my biggest regret is not birthing him and actually seeing my son.
Yeah.
And that's happened more since I had my daughter. I don't know if I would feel the same if I hadn't had her. But I look at her and I just think, I wonder how similar they would be.
Mm.
And we're now expecting a little boy now. And that's quite difficult as well, because I just constantly think, would they be alike? So I've come to terms with the fact it was definitely the right decision, but not necessarily how I went about it.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing there is that it was the right decision to terminate.
100%.
But what you're questioning is whether surgical termination was the right route for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, well, in that moment, I couldn't have seen him. I couldn't have done it any other way.
Yeah.
It's only when you look back on it, I think, is when you start to think about too much, really.
Yeah.
We all have that, don't we?
We do. I think whatever route you've taken, whether you've gone down the labor and delivery or whether you've gone down surgical, I think that there's always a tendency for the, you know, hindsight's 2020 and questioning and the what ifs. There's always room for that. Yeah, it's that thing about in the moment, and that's all that you have is in that moment.
And yeah, in that moment, it was right.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I one of the reasons we're probably talking about this now is because it's not talked about a lot, surgical termination. And
yeah,
we all say that it's termination for medical reasons is not talked about a lot at all. But when it is talked about, the vast majority of accounts are of medical management.
Yeah, accounts on social media is what Jane.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about naming and holding and seeing their baby, having pictures of their baby, and it can isolate those people that made a different decision. Mm. And they made that decision for the very best reasons at the time. I mean, Paige, you didn't have a lot of choice because you had the time pressure. You knew instinctively what you could best cope with, and that's all you could do. And absolutely, I'm not saying that it's unproblematic and there aren't difficult things with future children, etc. But that you had to do at the time is what you could cope with. And it's difficult when women see that most women are talking about medical, giving them those rites and rituals, and they think, well, I didn't do that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away from your feelings for that baby you had.
Yeah. In any way. I mean, Emma, how are you feeling sort of then, now?
Well, obviously, I hear lots of people's accounts of what they've gone through now. And there are parts of me that think, oh, especially with the situation that Gareth and I are in, facing infertility and perhaps not being able to genetically have another child together is a very real prospect for us, which made me grieve all over again, thinking I never got to meet our daughter and I may never get to genetically create another child with my husband. And I love the word and, I know that it was the best thing for me and him at the time. And I did the very best I could at that time in a very stressful situation. And that's all any of us can ever do. And you just have to offer, like Sabrina says, love and compassion to that version of you. And I say that, you know, the old version of you could be the version of you yesterday, right? But you've always got to turn around and just love that person because they're always doing their best. And I think it's swings and roundabouts for me. If I had gone through a labour and delivery, that would have brought its own trauma. Going through a surgical termination brought its own trauma. So for example, my trauma that I had to go and do EMDR for afterwards was coming in the nights and someone was coming and just ripping the baby from within me and stealing it from inside my body, which I'm certain came from the fact that I went to sleep pregnant and woke up not pregnant. So there's a gap there that my brain's trying to fill in. Now, if I've gone through the delivery, like I hear many women say, they have intrusive thoughts, flashbacks and sensations of the birth happening again and that sensation of feeling coming out of their body again. So I think either way I would have done that, I would have had trauma to work through.
Absolutely, yeah. Sabrina, you have a different sort of take, because what you wanted was to birth your baby. That's what you wanted, and it wasn't on the table.
No, it was not offered, and I asked and I almost pleaded.
Yeah.
So I hated that I had to do it that way, and I still hate it.
Yeah. And I know it's been something that you've, you know, that's been your trauma to have to work through.
So that was my experience, and it's my own thing that I wanted for me. And I don't judge others who want it one way or another. And I would just want them to have the experience that they desperately wanted to have with their baby, or for their body, or for their health, or for their mental state. It's really not about a D&E versus labor and delivery. It's not versus, it's just what that person individually is really wanting in the midst of so much that we cannot control. That was the one thing I wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I already knew that I had to end the pregnancy. I knew she was sick. I knew it was the best decision for us. But I feel like those memories were ripped from me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, your story, what you've just described is exactly why we developed the pathway that we did. You know, because I know there were people in your situation wanting to have a surgical and not being able to get it and being told that they had to have a medical induction. And at BPASS, actually, we continue to offer medical abortions, also up to 24 weeks. We're only able to do it at one clinic, but it's been so important to me as the clinical service lead to be able to at least have some option for people to make that choice, because it's exactly what you say. And what you describe is not unique to people having TFMR, really. Actually, lots of people who come to us for terminations feel like their life is out of control and they need to exert some control. And so it's really one of the reasons why I developed the pathway that we did. And also, this is just also reflecting a bit on Emma's story about wanting to have the cremation, which is absolutely heart-wrenching to hear. I think one of the things that I think we as the people who provide clinical services need to do is find ways to make it easier for people like yourselves to just simply state what it is that you need and to be able to get it. Not that you shouldn't have to go in and demand it. Obviously, services will have their limitations. You know, and COVID has been a real problem for us, particularly in terms of delivering this service. You know, we've been restricted from being able to have support people in the clinics. It's been a big problem, actually, and we've not been able to deliver the pathway as we had laid it out pre-COVID. But I think we healthcare providers need to find a way to make it more possible for every individual to be able to state what it is that they need, without having to really fight for it, which it sounds like what
you have like guidance for people who perhaps don't know what they need or want, because, you know, you're making all these decisions based on so many unknowns.
Yeah, so actually with Jane's guidance, we created specific information literature and a website for people considering coming to us for termination for fetal anomaly. And actually, we felt that we probably needed to include more detail about the procedure itself for people coming for TFMR than people who are having terminations for other reasons might want. They wanted to understand in quite a bit of detail, actually, what the experience of their baby might be, as well as what their experience would be. So we created some very specific literature for that group of patients so that they could really understand what they were going through and think through whether it was really the right decision for them to come. To number one, have a surgical termination, and number two, come and have it in our context.
I think that's really important. I mean, this has been a theme throughout the podcast about informed choice, you know, being able to have the information. With that, knowing that it's very difficult to take it in when you're already, you know, being hit with the trauma of the fact that this wanted baby is very poorly and you're being faced with this impossible decision. But there was something that I wanted to discuss, because it was in a recent article. Jane will know what I'm sort of going for here, but it was this sort of statement around, and it's, we've been kind of talking around it, this sort of a medical termination is better psychologically than a surgical one. And when that was printed, and there was a few people that messaged us and kind of went, I really didn't like reading that. And I can understand why. So what's behind that?
I think it was Zoe Williams' assumptions.
Oh, right. Okay.
Really and truly. I was very disappointed to see that. And well, you know, we've had this conversation, Hayley. Although it was good to have the article written about TFMR, there was a lot I was unhappy with in the article. She misquoted me. She misquoted other people that had spoken to her. She rushed it, and she did apologize because the editors got onto her or something, but it wasn't ideal. And that particularly was unhelpful, because I think it's because people make that assumption that this was a wanted pregnancy, therefore you wouldn't want to go down the surgical route. Mm-hmm. And I have to say some midwives have that attitude. Not all, but some think, mm-hmm. well, a natural way, you're a mother, so you'll want to be with us and birth your baby. And of course, that's fine for some women, but it's not right for all. And it goes back to, and Sabrina made the point so articulately, it's all about helping people recognize what's the right choice for them at the time.
Yeah. Leaving any judgment or whatever thinking you have behind this to one side and really focusing in on that,
yeah,
on that person in front of you. Emma, you've been nodding furiously.
Yeah, I just feel like echoing Jane and Sabrina, really, that it is so individual and there could be so many things in someone's life as to why they would choose one or the other that maybe they don't feel comfortable talking about when they're already overwhelmed with the fact they've just been told they've got to face this awful decision. Mm-hmm. And there may be things that they, you know, that's gone on in their life before that really would impact their decision in this moment. And really, it's not about anybody else's beliefs or wants or desires. You just have to back the parents, mm-hmm. and trust the parents that they're going to lean into whatever feels better for them. And there's a quote actually on ARC's website, which is, you will choose the thing that feels the least worst to you. And that really hit home with me when I was going through it, because there is no good decision in this. It's all awful. And you choose the one that feels the least worse. And that is part of our survival mechanism to what's going to be the least impactful to me to enable me to get through this and cope in the best way I can. And that is us taking the best care of ourselves. And that's us doing our best, right?
Yeah. And Paige, I'm really thinking of you, because this is kind of where you started this. You know, you were saying how, yes, termination was right for me. I'm sort of now, because I've had a daughter and I'm pregnant with another baby who's a boy, I'm now questioning this decision of surgical termination. I'm just wondering your thoughts on this statement about mental health, that, you know, psychologically one is better than the other. What does it sort of do to you to hear that?
Again, it's each to their own in what you decide to do. It took a couple of months for it to fully sink in what happened. My mental health took a dip about 3 months after it happened, and that's when I really started to struggle. I think it's quite disheartening actually to hear that statement. I wasn't aware of it until you just said it. I think it.
Sorry, can I just jump in here actually, because it's not true.
Oh no, I know it's not true.
So I just really, this is it. Jane will know these kinds of things infuriate me actually, yeah, because it is utter misinformation.
I think statements like that impact our mental health as women that have been through it.
Completely, I can completely understand that. I mean, what the studies actually show is that coping is related to getting what you felt you needed at the time, right? It's what Sabrina is talking about. It doesn't mean that sometimes people can't have your experience too, Paige, you know, where after the fact they have second thoughts, misgivings, and maybe they realize it wasn't the right thing. But in terms of longer term mental well-being, whichever method they get, it's irrelevant. It's about getting the method that suited them at the time, that they felt like would work. And other studies that have looked at people who had medical termination or surgical termination actually have found no difference in long-term mental health outcomes.
What I'm hearing is it's getting, being listened to and being given quality care.
Yeah, can I just emphasize the quality care and the information? Absolutely right. And it drives me nutty that anybody thinks one method is better for psychological outcomes. It's not. It's about being enabled to make the decision that's right for you at the time, as we've said, but also having good information and care through that. Because the people, think of all the people I've spoken to over the years, the people who have had extra struggles are people who perhaps chose the method but didn't know what it entailed.
Yeah.
So the people who went down the surgical route and didn't realize that the baby wasn't removed intact.
Yeah.
The people who went down the medical route and were told, oh, well, it's like a heavy period.
Yeah.
that they're the issues. So it's choice and good information. So absolutely, yeah, informed choice is absolutely key.
I was just wondering, actually, because with you, Sabrina, you didn't have that choice. So how was your mental health impacted?
Yeah, like I said before, I really feel like it caused a more severe case of PTSD. I don't know, since I didn't live the other experience, if I would have also had PTSD, and I could have had trauma from a birth as well. And I do believe that DNC and DNE is also birth, so not to use that word in that way, but these statements are so patronizing, so infantilizing, like, especially since this mostly happens to women, and we could even say queer people or non-binary people, being told what to do with their bodies, like, we don't know. Like, we don't know what's best for us. Like, we don't know what we want. Oh, the little woman, like, we'll tell her what's best. Mm. That's what feels really awful about statements like this, no matter which way, because some people say, oh, DNE is better for your psychological health, or labor and delivery is better for your psychological health. I've heard it both ways, but it's not true.
Yeah.
Neither way that statement goes, and patronizing patriarchal bullshit is what it is.
Yeah, thank you for our first, I think it's probably our first swear word in the episode. We need it to happen. Emma, what would you like to say?
That's thrown me now. It is just that actually that statement isn't fact-based. It's someone's opinion, because it's just not true, right? Like Patricia says, it's just not true. And I think also what Jane was saying, people being able to have informed choice. For me, I felt like I fell down the cracks, because I felt like if I want to be awake, I can have what I need, my partner with me, my baby looked after, and her remains taken care of and cremated. And I didn't want to be awake. I wanted to be asleep. I felt that was the best thing for me and my partner at the time. Or I could be asleep and be stripped of the things that I really felt I needed. And I really felt like I was just falling down the cracks of this and this. Within the two pathways, there was what I needed, but I couldn't have what I needed. And that's why I ended up going down the route I did. And I was fortunate to have the means to do that. But that's how it felt for me at the time.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you weren't being listened to?
I just felt like it was, I felt like all of these things are available, but not in the same room.
Yeah. It's like you can't mix these things. It's like you want the pick a mix. I want these different things from these different offers.
Yeah.
It's all option A or option B. You can't mix. Yeah.
And that to me just felt really unfair. And I ended up sort of feeling like, so if I was awake, I'd get the emotional care that I feel I need to support my emotional and mental health. But because I'm asleep, I get stripped of that extra TLC almost. Mm-hmm. And that was the bit that became my real pain point, my unbearable, non-negotiable point that I just couldn't get past, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. This is what we need to be hearing, really, isn't it? I mean, Jane, go on.
Yeah, it's not actually about surgery. It's about this idea of choice. And when those women, perhaps on reflection, think that the labour and birth option is the better, what they then come up against is where that might take place. Mm. And we know there are still hospitals that have a cutoff between where they enable that to happen. So up to a certain gestation, it has to be on a gynae ward. Now, with no disrespect to gynae nurses, often they're not trained to be able to afford the sensitivity and individualized care that these women need. And they won't get that there. Others might actually prefer to have a slightly more less TLC kind of care, because it's just congruent with how they feel. And they are put in a maternity ward, hearing other babies around them. So that side of things is another level of challenge people are often up against, not having a choice of where things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Catherine, that's your experience. Yeah. Our two experiences, mine and Catherine's experiences, are quite different in that we both had a medical termination or labor and delivery, whatever you want to call it. But Catherine's on a gynae ward, mine in a bereavement suite on the maternity unit.
I think I'm former. route, isn't it? Because you think, you know, you could want to be on a gynae ward, and then halfway through you might want to be on a labor ward because you want that TLC. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through, like, you know, the process of delivering, you think, I can't cope with this because there's too many other live babies screaming. So it's
It's really kind of a lottery as well. I mean, it was just luck that my hospital was set up the way that it was set up. There was no other reason for it. It's been a really, really interesting talk. And you know what? It's something that we can keep on coming back to. I know that there's so much to say. But before we sort of wrap up, Paige, I have something to read out to you.
Okay.
Paige is looking a little worried. Don't worry, it's a really lovely thing. It's come in from your brother. Paige, it's Zach, your younger brother. I just wanted to take this opportunity to tell you how proud I am of you. Not only have you been through hell, but you have come out the other side so much stronger and sharing your story. I'm sure others will agree you are incredible. I know nothing will ever fill the blue-shaped hole, but I hope that with all the love that Blue's little sister and little baby brother can bring, will help make up just a small bit. I have no doubt that you are a great mum, and I know Blue is watching over you, so proud. I love you, sis.
Wow. Wasn't expecting that at all.
No, he said you wouldn't be expecting it. And I told him that I would be lucky to get through that without crying. And I'm pleased that I'm slightly holding my breath. My chest feels really tight right now. It's just such a lovely thing to hear from your brother. And I wanted to say to everyone else listening to this episode that we would really love to do an episode with family or friends. So, you know, we want to hear about those experiences of being a family member and supporting your loved one through this, or being a really good friend and supporting your friend through this. So if that's you, then get in touch with us, because we'd love to hear from you. So I want to thank Patricia. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise and your knowledge.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jane, again, for coming on and sharing your time and your experience. Paige and Emma and Sabrina, it's just been really great to hear from you, and you've really enriched the conversation with your experiences in this. Thank you so much for being here. So that's it for this time.
We just want to thank you for listening, and we hope that you've taken something from this really important conversation we've all had today. Let us know by messaging us over on social media, Facebook, Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR, and Twitter at Talk TFMR.
You can also subscribe to our podcast from Podbean or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to make sure you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released.
That's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Bye.